Well, I'm very happy once again to welcome Dr. Kumar, who is going to extend her our discussion of the Vaisheshika. And today she's going to speak about the notion of Shabda, authority or sound, in the as a pramana, as a means of knowledge in the Vaisheshika. So I'll hand it over to you without further ado.
ॐ असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ शान्तिः शान्तिः शान्तिः. थैंक यू प्रोफेसर फ्लड. थैंक्स फ्रेंड्स फॉर कमिंग टू दिस थर्ड लेक्चर. I have already delivered one lecture and one seminar on Vaisheshika, and we have also had two classes independently. So I don't think now I need to introduce the background and the literature of Vaisheshika. I'll begin with my topic, which is Shabda as Pramana in Vaisheshika. And I aim to expound and examine the nature of Shabda in Vaisheshika system, which has been discussed there from two angles. One, Shabda as a Guna, and the two, Shabda as a Pramana. The ancient Vaisheshika, beginning from Prashastapada, the commentator of Vaisheshika, and going up to Udayana, that is 10th century, talks of Shabda as a Guna of Akasha and reduces it under Anumana as a Pramana, the ancient Vaisheshika, while the later Vaisheshika, starting from its amalgamation with Nyaya and its opposition to Buddhism, propounds Shabda as one of the separate independent Pramanas. Evidently, the scope of this paper will cover both these aspects, Shabda as a Guna and also Shabda as a Pramana, but the focus will mainly be on the latter. On the basis of the available Vaisheshika literature, we may say that the ancient Vaisheshika did accept that there is a non-scriptural kind of knowledge by verbal testimony, but argued that this is reducible to Anumana. Even Udayana argued in support of the Vaisheshika view that testimony-generated knowledge is only an inference and nothing else. So the ancient system does not grant an independent status to Shabda, with the sole exception of Vyoma Shiva, the commentator of Pradartha Dharma Sangraha, who rejects the traditional Vaisheshika argument of reducing Shabda to Anumana and establishes that it is an independent means of valid knowledge. Let us first go to Kanada and how he talks of the means of cognition. He says, he classifies these means of cognition under the guna buddhi. Kanada has enumerated seven padarthas or categories, as we know, dravya, guna, karma, etc. And amongst the 24 gunas, Kanada didn't talk of them as 24, he only enumerated 17. And out of those 17, buddhi or consciousness or cognition we have already discussed. He divided buddhi into two, vidya and avidya. Vidya and avidya. Vidya is valid cognition and avidya is invalid cognition, correct knowledge or incorrect knowledge. Then he subdivides vidya into four. And by now you must have noticed that Kanada is very fond of classification. So he divides vidya into four: pratyaksha or perception, pratyaksha, then laingika. He has his own name for anumana, laingika. That cognition which arises from the knowledge of linga or reason or hetu, that is laingika. Pratyaksha, laingika, and then he has his own smriti, memory. some of the later scholars don't accept Smriti to be a correct form of knowledge. But Kanada classifies it into Vidya. Smriti, and the third is, fourth is Arsh Jnana. Arsh Jnana. Arsham Siddha Darshanam Cha Dharmebhyah. That is what he talks of. We discussed it the other day. Arsha Jnana, intuitional knowledge that pertains to the seers or the rishis only. The term Arsha is derived from Rishi. So Arsham Yat Jnanam Tat Arsham Jnana. Four types of Vidya. And there are four types of Avidya. That is, first is Sanshaya, doubt. Sanshaya, Viparyaya, error. Anadhyavasaya, Anadhyavasaya, where one is not indecision, one is not able to decide whether this is right or this is right. While in Viparyaya, one decides on the wrong side. This is erroneous cognition. Sanshaya, one is oscillating. But in Anadhyavasaya, in Sanshaya, one is just oscillating between the two. In Anadhyavasaya, one is not able to decide even whether this or whether that. It's different from Sanshaya according to Kanada. Later on, they just did away with this Anadhyavasaya type of invalid cognition. And the fourth one is Swapna, dream. Dream also is not a valid cognition according to him. It is invalid. So these are the two types of buddhi, vidya and avidya. And you can see these four types of vidya he talks of, but when it comes to the means of knowledge, these are the types of knowledge or cognition. When he talks of the means of cognition, he accepts only two. Pratyaksha, it's not very clear actually. But what the interpreters have explained, that he talks of only two types of sources of knowledge or means of knowledge or pramanas, as we say, only pratyaksha and laingika. About pratyaksha, there is no debate because it is the indriyartha sannikarsha janyam jnanam pratyaksham, that which arises out of the contact of sense organ with an object which is present. So, indriyarthasan, there are five types of sense organs, and the sixth one is the dual sense organ, external as well as internal, that is manas. Ubhayatmakam indriyam manah. So, there are six types of perception. They are shrotraja or shravana, ghranaja, chakshusha, tvacha and rasana. And the sixth one is manasa, internal perception. And laingika is the type of cognition which arises out of a relation which obtains between sadhya and linga. Sadhya is the thing which is not known as yet, adrishta, while linga is the drishta. So from drishta, from seen factors, we try to achieve the knowledge of the unseen. For example, they have this classic example of fire on the hillside, and we know that smoke is there. We cannot see fire. If we could have been able to see fire, there was no need of anumana. Because we cannot see fire, we can only see smoke. And because it is on the hillside, we cannot go and check for ourselves whether there is fire or not. Therefore, we infer on the basis of a relation which obtains between hetu and sadhya. Many a times we have seen that wherever there is smoke, yeah, please.
Sorry, earlier you said ubhayatmakam mana. Why did you say ubhayatmakam?
Because manas is bahya indriya as well as antarindriya. The five sense organs are purely external.
It's not considered completely as an antakarana.
No, if it is completely antakarana, then it cannot relate to the external sense. So it acts as a mediator between the self and the external world. It takes messages or the whatever the stimuli has been received by the sense organs, it connects with them and then it connects with the inner self. That's why it is Ubhayatmakam Indriyam. But it is Indriya. Of course, it is Indriya. So, we were talking of the Laingika Jnana. This is inferential cognition. And the Vaisheshika clearly talks of Laingika. As comes to the third Pramana, the Nyaya, and of course Sankhya and Vedanta, Mimamsa, all of them accept that Shabda is a third type of Pramana. Nyaya accepts Shabda as a Pramana. When they talk of Pramana, it is known as Shabda. When the knowledge arising out of Shabda is meant, it is conveyed by the term Shabda. When we talk of Laingika Vidya or Laingika Jnana, we will call it Anumiti. Anumiti. Anumiti is the type of knowledge, and the means of knowledge is Anumana. Pratyaksha is the type of knowledge as well as the means of knowledge. We use the same term for means as well as for the result of knowledge. But when we come to Shabda, this is the problem. I am talking and everybody is listening. How this knowledge is arising from the words? That is the question. Is it inferential or is it an independent means of valid knowledge? Do the shabdas convey their meaning independently like other pramanas, or we have to infer the meaning of words which are being uttered? So for Kanada, he has given only one sutra. After explaining Pratyaksha and Laingika, he says, Etena Shabdam Vyakhyatam. Etena Shabdam Vyakhyatam. Now you can see the problem of interpretation. This can be interpreted in many ways, and it has been interpreted in so many diverse manners. Etena, with this explanation of Pratyaksha and Laingika, Shabdam Vyakhyatam. The knowledge arising out of words is also explained, right? Now, people say that because he has not given any separate independent definition or explanation of Shabda Bodha or verbal testimony, therefore, he wanted to include it or reduce it to Laingika or Anumana. Let us go to other commentators who explain Kanada and who explain the later commentaries, how they have a debate amongst themselves.
Means so Shabda is also inferential now.
Yeah, that's what they
because
are.
Because of this.
Yeah, this sutra. This is the clue. And one more interesting thing, Kanada talks of 17 gunas only. And out of these 17 gunas, he is not counting Shabda. In the 24 gunas, Shabda is there. But in the list of 17 gunas, which has been given by Kanada, Shabda is also not listed as a guna. So, now we have two angles to Shabda in Vaisheshika, as a guna of Akasha and as an independent Pramana. First, we shall discuss Shabda as a guna. Because Kanada has not talked of Shabda as a guna in the list. He has talked of Shabda otherwise, but he does not list it under the qualities. That is a problem. Even Udayana, he belongs to the 11th century AD, argued in support of the Vaisheshika view that the knowledge generated from verbal testimony is an inference. So, the ancient system does not grant an independent status to Shabda with the sole exception of Vyoma Shiva. And I will come to Vyoma Shiva, how cleverly he explains the words of Prashastapada, and he gives another new explanation also, and he subscribes to the old traditional view also. And that is possible because of this precision, or whatever you call it, the meaningfulness or the potency of Sanskrit language, where you can interpret a word in so many ways. It is significant to note that Kanada does not enumerate Shabda at all in his list of 17 gunas, although he does talk of it as an attribute of Akasha Dravya, since it can neither be ascribed to the four tangible substances, Prithivi, Jala, Teja and Vayu. Shabda cannot be ascribed to these four or nor to the Atman. Now, the five substances are warded off. Shabda cannot belong to the four tangible substances because the tangible substances and their properties, they are always caused by their own material cause. We haven't yet completed that portion in Tarka Sangraha, but we have just completed Prithivi. So the Ghranendriya, the Indriya or the sense organ of Prithivi is originated from material substances or the atoms of Prithivi, to be more precise. Similarly, the sense organ of water, what is that? Rasana. Rasanendriya is constituted of watery atoms, right? Similarly, Prithivi, Jala, then Tejas, Chakshu Indriya or the eye or the sight, this sense organ is constituted of the fiery atoms. And Vayu, the fourth substance, material substance, and the sense organ is Tvacha, skin. Tvacha is constituted of airy atoms. Four tangible substances, their sense organs are caused by the atoms of the same substance. While Akasha, being one, being eternal, being partless, cannot constitute anything. Akasha is niravayava and it is avibhajya, indivisible. It doesn't have any atoms, so it cannot give rise to the sense organ. Shrotrendriya is called an indriya, but it is not constituted of the atoms of Akasha. Akasha does not have any atoms as its parts. So this is something specific pertaining to Akasha and to Shrotrendriya.
But since sound is part of Akasha and the Shrotrendriya is to do with sound, so what relationship then?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. Shrotrendriya is termed as indriya because sound or shabda can only be grasped within the eardrum. If I am speaking, I may use a loudspeaker also, but if somebody's eardrum is defective or he does not have the capability of grasping the shabda, he will not. Shabda is traveling everywhere, but it is grasped only in this particular Shravana Vivara, they call it Karna Shashkuli Avachinna. So the space obtaining between this eardrum or the hole, that is the indriya. But the subtle difference between this indriya and the other indriyas is that while other indriyas are the products of their atoms, this indriya is not a product at all. So how is this indriya constituted then? They say that Shrotrendriya is not a product. It is just a part of Akasha. Akasha is Nitya. Akasha pertaining in this space is also Nitya. But we call it Shrotra because it is only at this place that Shabda can be grasped. If I put some cotton in my eardrums and I play music to the loudest volume, I will not be able to listen. So that proves that Shabda can be grasped, can be obtained only at this particular point of Akasha. But this is
It can be applied to all sense organs, right? I mean, that kind of a limitation. If you close your eyes, if your eye has a defect, you won't be able to see.
It's not defective. It's not only a question of defect. It is not the eye which is Chakshu Indriya. Mm. It is not the nose which is the Ghranendriya. It is the tip of the nose where we can grasp smell. That is Ghrana. Ghranam nasagravarti gandha grahakam indriyam. Similarly, Chakshu, eye is not the vision. Eye is only the abode where this sight, the capability of seeing is existing.
Is that why they call it Golakam?
Golakam, yeah. And there is a debate among these traditional scholars whether it is the black Golaka or the Shweta Golaka. They were debating amongst themselves. Chakshu. Krishna Taragravarti Chakshu.
That's later science.
Yeah. Because they had no access to any instruments or any apparatus. They are just conjecturing on the basis of their own experience or on the basis of inference. They only have two means of knowledge. Pratyaksha and Laingika. Shabda, of course, they have it in the form of Shruti tradition or the Veda or whatever they call it. For Vedanta.
Golaka?
Yeah.
How's Golaka written? Because it is the first G.
Golaka.
Yes,
shall I write in Nagari?
Yes, please.
Golaka. Right. So anything round is a Golaka. Gola.
Goli.
Hindi
comes
mein,
Goli. Goli.
Goli. Goli. Gola. Yeah. So, Shabda does not belong to the four tangible substances. Then we come, Shabda does not belong to Atman, because Atman has its own specific attributes which are not to be grasped through external sense organs, while Shabda is being grasped by an external sense organ. Shabda does not remain as long as its substratum exists. You see, they have divided 24 gunas on various counts. And one of them is, some gunas are yavad dravya bhavi and some are ayavad dravya bhavi. Yavad dravya bhavi means it sustains till such time that the substratum exists. For example, akasha is nitya. It will be existing forever. But shabda, being the guna of akasha, will it stay forever or will it abolish or get destroyed after it is being uttered? Common sensical answer you can give. What the Vaisheshikas have to say, they will say. What do you feel? Shabda is destroyed after it is being uttered or it will stay forever?
That's where the debate is.
There is a strong debate between the Mimamsakas and the Nayayikas. The Mimamsakas accept that Shabda is Nitya. It will never get abolished because they are not concerned with the words that I am uttering. They are concerned with the words of Veda and they will never accept that Shabda is Anitya. But the Nayayikas, as we have seen already, or the Vaisheshikas, they are the realists. Whatever is the common sense experience, that I utter some words and they are finished after that. In fact, they have gone to the extreme that each word or sound that I am uttering is momentary. Even this momentariness has two explanations. For the Buddhists, momentariness means one moment. The moment I utter, it is gone. But for the Nayayikas, momentariness means three moments. Because they have their logic. The first moment is of utterance, right? The second moment, the moment I utter, it is gone. Then the word travels. The first word that I utter is gone. But before it is gone, it has given rise to the new one. And there is a chain of words. And by the time it is grasped within the eardrum of some hearer, that is the second moment. So first is uccharana, second is grahana, and the third moment is of destruction or vinasha. So kshanikatva for them means trikshanavasthayitvam. Kshanikatvam. So for them, word is anitya. Anitya means it is trikshanavasthayitva, but the shabda travels as long as it reaches the eardrum of a hearer. Right? So there are three types of shabdas. First is sanyogaja, arising out of conjunction of the organs which are used while uttering some letters. Sanyogaja. Mukha, talu, etc. They get into conjunction and then a letter can be pronounced. Sanyogaja. Second type is vibhagaja. If I take a, what you call, bamboo and I just break into two, I haven't uttered anything, but I break the bamboo into two and some sounds emanate. Isn't it? That is the vibhagaja shabda. Sanyogaja, vibhagaja, and the third is shabdaja shabda.
Excuse me, sanyogaja, what's the example you said?
Sanyogaja, all words are sanyogaja because when my talu, tongue and all these organs air is in conjunction with these organs from where the letter is being pronounced, then only I am able to utter anything. Otherwise, no single organ or single element can pronounce a word. So, Sanyogaja is for all types of letters being pronounced. Because Shabda by nature, it can be of two types, Varnatmaka or Dhvanyatmaka. Varnatmaka, that which I am speaking, and Dhvanyatmaka, breaking of the bamboo tree. Sound is emanating, but there is no letter in that. But that is a Shabda as well. So, Shabdaja Shabda is that which gives rise to another Shabda. I have spoken a letter, it is destroyed after the second moment, but it goes on and on. Now there is another debate, how the word or the sound travels. Does it travel straight or does it travel in a circular way? They have given both the examples, and the examples are given only from observation of natural elements. The first example they have given is Vichi Taranga Nyaya. Just as one wave in this water stream gives rise to another, similarly it goes on like this and this, Vichi Taranga Nyaya. But there is a flower, Kadamba flower, which is circular, and the sound travels in circular. And the example they have given for this, the evidence that they have given is Dheri, the drum. If you beat the drum, the sound doesn't travel like this. You can listen this sound in circular way. If you beat the drum here, somebody at my back will also be able to listen at this side also and this side also. So these are the practical day-to-day examples they were observing and forming their theories upon the basis of that. As I had said the very first day, the presupposition for them is that samvideva bhagavati vastu pagame naha sharanam. We don't have anything else to support our statements. It's only the commonsensical day-to-day experiences of ordinary people. So that is why this philosophy is very much appealing to the common mind, to the masses. And that is why it was not held in high esteem by the scholars. So we go back to Shabda as a guna. Shabda does not remain as long as its substratum exists. This was the point I was trying to explain. Shabda is an ayavad dravya bhavi guna. Two types of gunas. Oh, it's over. How to change it?
Turn from.
Can you? I can do it.
That's what I always tell my students. The ancient philosophers talk of ghata and pata. And in India, while I'm teaching, I always talk of the chalk and the duster. But here, I can talk of the pen and the paper. Because whatever is in front of you, that's why there was a very interesting paper. Why Indian philosophers only talk of ghata and pata? Because there was a ghata kept in front of them for water, and pata they were having for... So we go to the gunas, and it is very interesting to study the classification of gunas according to their similarities and dissimilarities. If you remember the second lecture I gave, concept of dharma, and the second sutra or the third sutra which Kanada says, dravya guna karma samanya vishesha samavayanam Shannam api padarthanam sadharmya vaidharmyabhyam tattva jnanat nishreya sadhigamah. So sadharmya vaidharmya is the methodology that they are adopting. We can study these padarthas in two ways. First is we notice the similarities amongst them, and the second method is we just dissect them and see what is dissimilar amongst them. Anvaya and vyatireka. That is how we operate, isn't it? So they have divided these 24 gunas on various counts. These are the similarities and these are the dissimilarities. One of them is Yavad Dravya Bhavin. Yavad yavad dravya bhavi. Gunas are of two types. Either they are yavad dravya bhavi or they are ayavad dravya bhavi. Yavat dravyam bhavati tavat bhavantiti yavat dravya bhavino gunaha. As long as the dravya is staying, if its gunas stay up to that point, then they are yavat dravya bhavi. If they are destroyed even before the substance is destroyed, or if they can stay after the substance is destroyed, can they stay? Can the gunas subsist on their own without any substance? They cannot. So there are two possibilities. Either they exist up to the point the substance exists, or they are destroyed even before that. If they are destroyed before the destruction of the substance, then they are ayavat dravya bhavi. And if they stay as long as the substance stays, they are yavat dravya bhavi. Now let us examine the status of shabda. Shabda is yavat dravya bhavi or ayavat dravya bhavi. What is the dravya of shabda? Where does shabda belong to? Which is the dravya?
Akasha.
Okay. Is shabda yavat dravya bhavin or ayavat dravya bhavin?
According to your
ayavat. Because akasha is nitya, it will never get destroyed. And shabda, as we have discussed, even if we forget what the Vaisheshikas say about the nature of shabda, its eternity or non-eternity, but shabda is not going to stay as long as akasha will stay. So it is a ayava dravya bhavi guna. One more feature we will come across is pradesha vritti. Pradesha vritti. Or we also call it vyaptya vritti. Sorry, pradesha vritti is avyaptya vritti. There are gunas which pertain to the whole of the substance, and there are gunas which pertain to a specific region of that substance. For example, there is a conjunction between this pen and my hand. Conjunction is a property, sanyoga. Sanyoga is a vyapya vritti, samagra vritti, or avyapya vritti. Is this conjunction between my hand and the pen? Okay. This conjunction is pertaining to the whole of my hand or only to a part of my hand? Only to the tips of two fingers. So this is avyapya vritti, ansha vyapi, pradesha vyapi, right? Similarly, shabda. Shabda is pradesha vritti or samagra vritti. Is it vyapya vritti or avyapya vritti? Shabda. Does it pertain to the whole of akasha? What is the measurement of akasha? Akasha is vibhu, all pervasive, isn't it? Is shabda all pervasive? If you subscribe to this view, then nobody can listen anything. Because akasha is nitya, akasha is all pervasive, and if shabda is also all pervasive, we cannot listen anything. We can listen if I am speaking here and all of you start speaking, can we listen anything? So if shabda is all pervasive, we cannot listen. Therefore, logically we have to accept that shabda is only avyapya vritti. It subsists in some portions of its substratum, that is akasha. Right? Yeah. Please.
But the Vedic people would have said that the shabda exists right throughout akasha. And
yeah.
Once you calm your mind, you'll hear it.
No, in principle, shabda is a guna. As a guna, shabda belongs to an eternal substance, nitya dravya, akasha. And they have a theory that the gunas of nitya dravyas should also be accepted to be nitya. But logically now they are analyzing. Now akasha is sarva vyapi. Shabda, if they hold it to be eternal, the same theory would apply. And you have rightly said the Vaidikas. And the Mimamsakas are the Vaidikas. They accept the same. And there is a very interesting debate between the Mimamsakas and the Vaisheshikas. They say that the Shabda is Nitya, and the Vaisheshikas would raise an objection, then they will raise a counter objection. It's a very interesting study. But for the Vaisheshikas, Shabda is not Nitya. Shabda is also not Samagra Vyapi, Dravya Vyapi. It is only Avyapya Vritti. It is heard wherever it is being spoken, and if it is obtainable up to the eardrum of a hearer. Suppose I am shouting alone in a forest, nobody is there available to listen to it, nobody will listen it. So it has to be within the reach of the eardrum of a hearer. There has to be a vakta, there has to be a shrota, and the shrota should have his eardrum in perfect condition. And if the words being uttered by the speaker are being heard by him, then it will be pradesha vritti. But the next question which we are going to discuss is shabda being comprehended or heard by the hearer as a direct perceptible cognition, or is it being inferred? That is the point of discussion we will undertake. The above 3 points briefly sum up the nature of shabda as a guna in Vaishnava. Right now we are discussing only shabda as a guna, but we cannot understand shabda as a pramana unless we have understood the nature of shabda as a guna. It is important to mention that Vyoma Shiva has elaborated on these points also in his commentary and has concluded that shabda is a real physical property and not only a subjective sensation, since it is cognized by a number of persons at the same time through their external sense organs. It's true, one person is speaking or one radio is on and so many people can grasp it simultaneously through their own external sense organs. So shabda is not a subjective experience, it is an external material property. Further, an important aspect of shabda as a guna in Vaisheshika is its non-eternity, in contrast to the Mimamsa position of shabda and its eternity, which I have hinted in brief. There has been a long debate between these schools, which is quite significant for studying the development of sound theory in Indian philosophy. Moreover, the intra-organic production of sound as well as the wave theory of the Vaisheshika, the Vichitaranga Nyaya and the Kadamba Mukula Nyaya, is a clear contribution of the system towards conceptualization of shabda as a guna. So we end here with the nature of shabda as a guna. More importantly, it is the question of shabda as a pramana which signifies the struggle and development of Vaisheshika both internally within the system as well as externally with other systems of Indian philosophy. As stated above, Kanada does not accept shabda as a separate pramana, and after explaining pratyaksha and laingika, he merely states etena shabdam vyakhyatam, that is, the verbal testimony should be understood with the explanation of inferential cognition. This has mostly been interpreted to suggest that shabda should be included in anumana itself and there is no need to explain it additionally and independently. But some scholars have interpreted this to convey that the process of verbal cognition is like that of inference and hence it should be explained on the same pattern. Just as inferential cognition arises with the knowledge of linga, similarly verbal cognition arises with the knowledge of meaning of the word. The term that the Vaisheshikas use for their categories is the term padartha. Padartha. And there is a very significant aspect to this term which I hinted to in the first lecture, pada and artha. Pada is word and artha is meaning. And what is the common characteristic among 6 categories or padarthas? Shannam api padarthanam astitva, abhidheyatva and gyayatva.
So pada is word and artha is meaning. Right?
And the three characteristics which pertain to all the six categories is astitva. Whatever exists in the universe is a padartha because it exists. But not only existing is enough. Existence alone is not enough. There are two more characteristics. And next is abhidheyatva. Anything which exists should also be communicable. If there are thousands or millions of things in the world, but I cannot talk about them, I cannot convey about them, I cannot communicate about them, they will not be termed padartha. They may be sat, they may be vastu, they may be tattva, but they will not be padartha unless I am able to communicate about them through language. And the third is, language presupposes knowledge, isn't it? Jnayatva. Anything which exists can be communicated through words only if it is knowable. So the reality is existent, reality is communicable through language, and reality can be known, can be thought of. So language, reality and thought, three aspects are being suggested by this term padartha. And now we are going back to this relationship between pada and artha, word and meaning, word and meaning. What is the relation between word and meaning? What do you think? What is the relation between word and meaning? Why the pen was called a pen and not a board? Who decided that this pen will be called a pen? Who decided?
It's like a transaction, isn't it? Somebody says, right.
But somebody, to argue, somebody for the first time, for example, there are many things which are being invented now, and their names are being all invented also. So is the relation between word and meaning decided by a human agent, or is it a divine gift, or whatever it is? What do you feel? Yeah. That is again that the word and meaning. For Mimamsakas, there is no problem. Word is eternal, meaning is eternal, and their relation is eternal. So no problem. But the Nayayikas are not like that. They will go through logic. So for them, Kanada has given a clue. Samayikaha shabdad artha pratyayaha. Samayikaha. Samayikaha shabdat artha pratyaya.
You mean that time? Hmm?
No.
Time? No.
That is where Sanskrit is required. Samayikaha. Here is a term, samaya. And samaya is a technical term. Mm. Samaya. Of course that means time, but here they have some technical definition. What is samaya? Does anyone know? Have you heard of Kavi Samaya? No?
Kavi Samaya.
Kavi Samaya. There are some beliefs and thoughts which are prevalent among the poets, Sanskrit poets especially. These are the traditions, some conventions, poetical conventions. They are known Kavi Samaya. But for us, there is a definition of Samaya. Asmat padat ayamartho bodhavya iti ishwarecha sanketah shaktihi samayah. What is samaya? Samaya is a potency. What is this potency about? About the meanings and words. And who decided that this word will be used for conveying this meaning? Asmat padat ayam artho bodhavyah iti ishwarecha sanketah. In the beginning, because the theistic arguments that the Nayayikas propose, one of these arguments is that he is the first teacher of language and behavior. Who is the first teacher logically? I have learnt whatever my mother, father and teachers taught me. They had learnt whatever their ancestors taught them. And going back and back, we must stop somewhere. The first teacher. Who is that first teacher? Even the Yoga Sutra says, स पूर्वेषाम् अपि गुरुः कालेन अनवच्छेद. देर हैज टू बी अ फर्स्ट गुरु एंड गॉड वॉज दैट गुरु. सो इट इज ईश्वर इन द बिगिनिंग बट दे डू गिव स्कोप फॉर ह्यूमन एजेंसी. दैट शक्ति इज ऑफ टू टाइप्स, ईश्वरीय शक्ति एंड आधुनिक शक्ति. So what is that aadhunika? Because newer and newer words are coming into practice and their meanings have to be decided. So later on, aadhunika shakti is manushya, ishwarechha athava manushyechha. So that much scope the later interpreters have given.
And would they say that ishwara shakti pertains to this much of words? Would they have any?
Exactly, whatever words are used in the Vedas, that language is given by God. That for the sake of argument, we have to accept that this much language or these many words were given to us in the beginning of each creation. For Vaisheshikas, in the beginning of each creation. For Mimamsakas, no beginning of creation. No God is required for them. God is dispensable for them. Because words are eternal, meanings are eternal, this world is eternal, everything is eternal for them. So, samaya is a technical term. This means that the divine suggestion, and later on it may be accepted that human agency was added into it. So, every word has a meaning.
And could you please say that Sanskrit?
Asmat padat ayam artho bodhavya.
Sorry. Asmat padat
ayam artho bodhavya iti ishwarecha. इति ईश्वर इच्छा संकेतः शक्तिः.
अयमर्थ बोधव्य
इति ईश्वर इच्छा संकेतः शक्तिः समयः.
गॉट अप टू
ईश्वर इच्छा. आई विल जस्ट राइट फॉर यू, नो प्रॉब्लम. सो द मीनिंग्स एंड द वर्ड्स आर रिलेटेड naturally or through divine intervention, and later on they go on through convention, isn't it? If I learnt Punjabi as a mother tongue, I will learn those words and their meanings. If somebody knows Latin or Italian as his or her mother tongue, he will learn the meanings of those words. So convention. Later on the term samaya came to suggest convention. So thing is that words and their meanings are not eternally related, but they are related on, this is much more commonsensical, isn't it? If they are eternally related, then the variety of languages and their meanings cannot be explained. But if it is due to convention, so every place has its own convention, every language has its own meanings, so we can explain it. Now we go. So shabda, as a pramana we were discussing, etena shabdam vyakhyatam, that is the verbal testimony should be understood with the explanation of anumana. Some scholars, as I said, have said that etena shabdam vyakhyatam means that shabda bodha, or the knowledge arising out of verbal testimony, should be explained as anumana has been explained. Now it does not in any way mean that Kanada did not hold Shabda as an independent pramana, as he has himself talked of the validity of verbal testimony at the very beginning of the discourse. In the third sutra, if you remember, the first sutra is Athato Dharmam Vyakhyasyama. Now, thereafter, we shall explain the nature of dharma. What is dharma? Yato bhyudaya nishreya sasiddhi sa dharma. Where does it come from? What is the evidence for this type of dharma? Tad vachanat amna yasya pramanyam. Tad vachanat. What does this tad signify? There is also a debate. Tad vachanat amna yasya pramanyam. Amnaya means? Amnaya?
Tradition?
Yeah, Veda, Shruti. Amnaya, Veda. Yam Amananti. So that is Amnaya, which has been given to us in the form of the oral tradition. Tad Vachanat Amnayasya Pramanyam. The validity of Veda depends on
the narration of dharma. Tad means dharma. It's not that dharma is valid because it is stated in the Veda. Rather, Veda's validity depends on the description of dharma.
Hmm.
So this is again, this tat is very problematic.
Hmm.
According to some scholars, this tat signifies Ishvara. But there is no reference to Ishvara in the first and second sutra. There is a reference to dharma in the very first sutra. There is a definition of dharma in the second sutra. Therefore, the validity of Veda depends on the description of dharma. Veda is valid because it talks of dharma, right?
So wouldn't this be like a Mimamsa position?
This one?
Yeah.
No. For them, anything is valid because it is stated in the Veda. For them, Veda is the supreme. That is why they just dispense away with God. If they accept God, so God being like any other human agent may err at times. So the Veda is impersonal, apaurusheya. While for them, Veda is also a paurusheya creation, with the difference that we are human beings, we know a little and we do not know much. But he is an omniscient person, so Veda does not contain any falsities or any errors. So, what do we want to say? That Kanada accepts the validity of Veda. And what is Veda? Veda is Shruti, verbal testimony. So, what I want to convey is that Kanada does not negate the possibility of verbal testimony. He accepts this Shabda Pramana, but he does not say it categorically that Shabda is an independent Pramana. The commentators of Vaisheshika, including Prashastapada and Sridhara, have followed the first interpretation of Kanada's statement regarding Shabda Pramana and have asserted that judgments derived from verbal testimony represent only a variety of inference. Since they satisfy all the requirements of inference, they involve perception, that is auditory perception of sounds, as well as knowledge of regular concomitants. See, I am uttering some words and you are listening to it. But how do you arrive at the meaning of these words? That is the crux of the point. Do you arrive at the meaning of the words directly, or do you have to have a prior knowledge of the relation between a word and a meaning? And the best example would be if I am learning a language, or if you see a child who is learning a language, or if any grown-up person who is learning Italian, Hungarian, or any new language for that matter, suppose somebody who doesn't know Sanskrit and he is learning Sanskrit language. Will he grasp the meaning of the words being uttered at once, or will he have to think about the relation between words? That is the question. What do you feel? The latter one. So that means Shabda is not an independent Pramana. It is like inference.
Hmm.
You cannot infer anything out of anything, isn't it? You can infer fire on the basis of smoke only if and when you know that there is an inseparable relation between smoke and fire.
One argument.
Yeah.
You think in relation with two other because you know about the two other, at least two before. But then if you can go like that, in the beginning there could be at least one word which is given for which you cannot extend it.
Yeah.
Because you don't have further words to relate it with.
Yeah.
So at least in the beginning, it may be understood as given.
Yeah.
May not be inferential.
That's why they have very clearly said that it is given by God.
Mm-hmm.
They have said it. In theory, they have accepted it. But now the question is, how do we derive the meaning or the import of words? Is it spontaneous? Is it direct? Like the pratyaksha. I see a thing and I perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
I hear something and I get the sound. The sound can be grasped immediately. But the meaning, the import, how do I arrive at that? Is it direct or is it mediate? That is the question. If it is direct, then Shabda is an independent Pramana. If it has to be mediate and one has to think about the relation,
we don't experience it in the case of words and languages that we are very convenient with. But if we go to a new language, or if we observe the behavior of a child who is learning the language, every time we show him a cow and we have to tell him, and at times these days children have to learn two or three languages. I have to tell my grandson this is a guy, then his mother will tell this is a cow. And if I have to teach him Sanskrit, I'll say the gauhu. So how will he come to know? Whenever a word gauhu is uttered, he will remember what my grandmother taught me. And if he goes to school, he will have to remember what his teacher taught him, isn't it? So you have to think of this relation. If you have to think of this relation, then it is nothing but inference.
But the Mimamsas say that it's direct, right?
They you see, the problem with Mimamsa, happens. The difference with Mimamsa is that they are not talking of verbal testimony with reference to human beings. The Laukika Vachanas are not Pramana for them. They are only talking of Vaidika Vakya.
Yeah.
But here, the definition of Shabda given by Kanada is Shrotra Grahano Yo Artha Sa Shabda. So it's not only the capturing of sounds. Shrotra Grahana Dhvani Shabdo Nasti. Shrotra Grahano Yo Artha Sa Shabda. And Gautama, the Nyaya Sutrakara, he goes even further. Aptopadeshah Shabdah. It's not only the word of, because he is talking of an independent pramana. Gautama is talking of verbal testimony as an independent means of valid cognition. If it has to be valid, it doesn't have just to be the meaning of a word. It has to be the upadesha of an apta, a reliable person. Whatever I am saying regarding Vaisheshika, you people are taking it to be true, isn't it? You don't doubt that maybe I am telling something wrong, but you are accepting it because you feel you are convinced that she is a scholar of Vaishnava. Maybe I am not, but you are accepting it, isn't it? So what is aptata? Aptata yatha bhutasya arthasya upadeshta. One who tells things as they are. Yatharthasya yatha bhutasya arthasya upadeshta. And a very interesting thing is, in Nyaya, somebody asks him that suppose there is a thief or there is a bad man, maybe he is belonging to a lower caste, and if he says something, will you accept him? He says, yes. Rishyaryam lechanam samanam lakshanam. Maybe it is a rishi or an arya, a noble person, or even a mlecha. But if he knows something and if he is telling it the way it will be pramana. So that's a very revolutionary statement for that period in the Nyaya Sutra. Aptata belongs not only to Vedic Vakyas. Reliability pertains to the statements. Suppose I am asking somebody, where is this Gloucester Green bus stop? Maybe anybody, A, B or C, if he knows the way and if he tells me go this into this direction, it is a Shabda Pramana. It is a valid statement. So, the second line of interpretation, the first one is that Shabda is like Anumana. The second line is put forth by Vyoma Shiva, who departed from his tradition and accepted the difference between inference and verbal testimony. And interestingly, when Professor Gavin was talking about the Pashupatas yesterday, there is a suggestion in the tradition of Vaisheshikas that Vyoma Shiva was a Pashupata. And he departed from his tradition many a times. This is one of the points where he departs from the tradition and interprets this in such a way that it can belong to the traditional line of argument also, but it can also mean like this. And I'll show how he says. He says that the verbal, the knowledge or the cognitions except verbal testimony are to be an Shabdadi naam apyanumane antarbhava. I'll show you how these clever interpreters act. There is a sentence in Prashastapada which says, Shabdadi naam. Mapyanumane antarbhava.
Nowadays we don't take this word Adi with much seriousness, isn't it? We just translate it etc., etc. But what does it mean literally?
One beginless.
Shabda Adinam, that which begins with Shabda. Shabda Adau Yasya Saha. Shabdadinam. And there are two types of Bahuvrihi, if you would know. Tadguna Samvijyana and Atadguna Samvijyana. And I'll quote from Vyoma Shiva himself. He says if we take one type of Bahuvrihi, it will mean that all the Pramanas, including Shabda, and in the other line of interpretation, it will mean that the Pramanas which start from Shabda and not Shabda itself. Shabda will be excluded in one line of interpretation, and in the other line of interpretation, Shabda will be included. So he has tried to interpret it in two ways, and he goes on to say that according to Karnada, Shabda is not like Anumana. It is an independent. But the other Pramanas, there are many more. Shabda Adinam. And if you know, there are in all eight Pramanas in the Hindu tradition. What are the eight? If you remember, Pratyaksha, Anumana, Shabda, then comes the Upamana, then Arthapatti, which is again presumption, which is again an independent Pramana for the Mimamsakas, Arthapatti and Anupalabdhi. That is also a Pramana for Mimamsakas, non-apprehension. Arthapatti is presumption. Anupalabdhi is non-apprehension. And then there are two more for the Pauranikas, Sambhava and Aitihya. So, Aitihya. So, Sambhava possibility. And Aitihya is, so say the ancestors. They are Yakshaha Prativasati Asmin Vrikshe. So, who knows? How do you know that Yakshaha Prativasati? Evam Pravadanti.
Aitihya. This is for the Pauranikas.
Yeah, two Pramana, Sambhava and Aitihya. So, these Shabdadinam means beginning from Shabda, but excluding Shabda. These are all to be included or reduced to Anumana according to Vaisheshika, but not Shabda. That is what Vyoma Shiva has done. Vyoma Shiva's own, I am quoting from Potter, Vyoma Shiva's own predilections are clearly favorable to the Nayayika view that verbal testimony as an independent instrument of knowledge, though he admits that verbal testimony involves a number of items paralleling inference, such as invariable concomitants, vyapti, and paramarsha, etc., still these are all technical terms of anumana, vyapti and paramarsha, still the object of verbal testimony is beyond the senses and the process involves reference to the conventions governing the use of words. Unless you know the meaning of the words or the convention governing those meanings, you may hear whatever, but you may not reach at the actual import of it. Isn't it? So I leave out whatever the Nyaya school, because the time is very short and I want that there should be some discussion. There is a whole lot of Nyaya. When both of these schools amalgamated, the Nyaya viewpoint was incorporated into the Vaisheshika and its Prakarana Granthas. And what the later writers have done, whenever they are writing about Vaisheshika, they will begin with the seven Padarthas, and when the discussion starts on the 16th quality, Buddhi, they will bring in the system of Nyaya and discuss these Pramanas according to Nyaya very conveniently, then go back to Vaisheshika. And when they are writing a textbook based on the Nyaya, what they will do? They will enumerate the 16 categories of Nyaya, and when the second one, Prameya, comes, under that they will bring in the Vaisheshika Padarthas, discuss it, and then go back to Nyaya. But later on they became like sister concerns. So I had traced in my paper the whole arguments given by Nyaya. I leave all that. But this one I would like to quote from Vishwanatha, Nyaya Panchanana, the writer of Bhasha Paricheda. He is a very later writer, 16th century. He says, in the opinion of the, he very clearly says that the Vaisheshikas don't accept this,
but we the Nayayikas have to accept it. Shabdopama Nayor Naiva Prithak Pramanya Mishyate Anumana Gatarthatvat Iti Vaisheshikam Matam. Although he is writing it on the basis of Vaisheshika, but here he has clearly shown his difference than the Vaisheshikas, and he says that we are the Nayayikas, and according to us, Tanna Samyak. This Vaisheshika Mata is not Samyak. Tanna Samyak Bina Vyapti Bodham Shabdadi Bodhatah. Because Shabda Bodha is not like inference or Anumiti, where Vyapti is a prerequisite. In Shabda Bodha, the text which Vishwanatha has written is divided into four chapters: Pratyaksha Khanda, Anumana Khanda, Shabda Khanda, and Upamana Khanda. So he very clearly accepts that there are four Pramanas. The later Nayayikas and Vaisheshikas are unanimous on this point, that we have to accept at least four Pramanas. The rest four we can do away with, but these four have to be accepted. In this way, I'll conclude, the Nyaya scholars have, one after the another, argued that Shabda cannot be reduced to Anumana. It is an independent and separate Pramana according to them. On closer analysis, one can easily notice that Pratyaksha is a direct experience, while inference is based on reasoning. Both of these are based on one's own authority and are therefore subjective. Of course, Anumana is divided into two: Swarthanumana, which is subjective, and Parathanumana, which is for making the other person understand that there is fire on the hill. So there is an aspect of objectivity there. But Shabda is wholly based on the authority of another person's experience. We are listening to what is being given to us, which is communicated through the medium of language. It is therefore rightly characterized as Shabda. One may again distinguish between relative authority and absolute authority. Relative testimony or authority of human beings like Asmadadi Sadrisha, and absolute authority of the Vedic Vachanas. Relative authority is mainly to be derived from the experience of the other person, but can also fall within one's own experience. The question of absolute authority pertains to apaurusheya mode of knowing, impersonal, while that of relative authority relates to a person who is reliable and trustworthy in communicating whatever he or she has experienced and learnt. This brings us to the question of human agency and provides for a bonding between one person and the other. None of us can experience each and everything on our own. We have to go beyond ourselves and trust on others' experience as well. Organized social life demands the recognition of authority to what others have to say. It is in this perspective that, in addition to direct experience, pratyaksha, and reasoning, anumana, the third mode of knowing was accepted as shabda or verbal testimony of an authority. It is such a mode of knowing that is scriptural also and is termed as Shruti or Veda in Indian philosophical tradition. To conclude, it may be said that in general, Shabda stands for human speech and hence for linguistic utterances. Such utterances are usually made by a speaker, a person who's participating in a linguistic community. The mechanism can be understood on the basis of several other conditions, such as the knowledge of the word in the hearer, that is, derived from hearing the efficient causal factor or instrument, and his final knowledge of the meaning of the uttered sentence, prama or phala. Please remember that according to Nyaya Vaisheshikas, there is a difference between pramana and prama. For the Bauddhas, there is no difference. They only accept pramana. Pramana is the source of knowledge, but there is no difference between pramana and prama. They accept only two, maya and mana. Meyam dvividham mana dvaividhya. That is the Buddhist dictum. For Nayayikas or Vaisheshikas, there are four aspects to any cognitive aspect and cognitive act. They are the pramata, first the subject or the agent, then a prameya, an object, pramana, means of knowing, and prama, pramiti or prama, the result of cognition. So the result of cognition is different from the means of cognition. So this we have to keep in mind. This model is applied to explain the origin of any mental event, especially the cognitive process, which we may call knowledge episodes, according to Motilal. I am quoting from his book, Word and the World. In brief, knowledge from this point of view is a cognitive process occurring in the subject, generated by a set of causal factors. Consequently, the hearer derives an occurrent knowledge from words and sentences uttered by a reliable speaker. This type of knowledge is granted a special status by most of the Indian philosophers, and they did not favor reducing it either to perception or to inference, because knowledge of the words themselves may be perceptual or inferential, but the knowledge derived from the words is neither perceptual nor inferential. Last but not the least, it is the implicit trustworthiness of the speaker which is the most significant factor in such transmission of knowledge through words. It is the trust assigned to the words as linguistic utterances that makes the magic of creating shabda as pramana in Indian philosophy in general and the Vaisheshika in particular. Thank you. I would welcome any comments, questions. Yeah, please.
I was wondering, so this is debate was going on between the Vaisheshikas and Mimamsakas, and I've read about that quite a lot. They talk about it quite a lot. But where were the, how did Sankhya, the followers of Sankhya fit into this?
Yeah.
Were they involved in this? Because they never seem to discuss
participate
that,
in, yeah, this. In this. For them, Shabda is a Trividham Pramana Mishtam. That is what is given in Sankhya Karika. That is the only, because we don't get the earlier literature of Sankhya. And Sankhya Karika explicitly mentions Trividham Pramanam Ishtam. They accept the Shabda Pramana for that matter. But for them also, Shabda Pramana does not pertain to the Vedic sentences, because they have said that Veda is not perfect in itself. So they are also realists as far as the notion of verbal testimony is concerned. But it is true they didn't participate in this debate between the eternity of Shabda and non-eternity of Shabda. The Mimamsakas and the Nayayikas are on the both sides. The Mimamsakas are objecting to this non-eternity of words, and the Nayayikas are taking cudgels against them. Sankhya is not a participant to this debate, you are right. Because they have not only not accepted Vedic authority, they have rejected it also. In the third or fourth Karika itself, they say that the Vedic sentences are not correct. So they have just, in a way, denounced. But the Vaisheshikas, on the one hand, claim tad vachanad amna yasya pramanyam. Also, there is a statement, buddhi purva vakya kritir vede. They want to be termed as Vaidikas, and they are not ready to accept it as an eternal and independent pramana. That is why this debate got even more curious.
According to the Sankhya, is Shabda eternal, or it's also temporary like the Nyayakas?
I can't exactly say, because for them I think the Shabda is only eternal up to the point of the hearing. They don't accept Veda, so for them it's not eternal. I don't think so.
You go on first. I'm not a student.
Yeah, no problem. Everybody of us is a student. Each one of us.
Could you just briefly summarize, so then what's the Vaisheshika view of Vedic Shabda?
Of Vedic Shabda?
Yeah.
Yeah. they say that when they have accepted the Shabda, earlier they didn't accept Shabda, or even if they accepted, they didn't clearly say that Shabda is an independent Pramana. But even then, they say that Shabda is of two types, Laukika, Vaid. First, Shabda is of two types, Dhvanyatmaka and Varnatmaka, on the basis of the nature of Shabda. And on the basis of the origin of the Shabda, there are two types, Vaidika and Laukika. Vaidikam tu sarvam eva pramanam, Laukikam tu aptoktam eva pramanam. That's it. So, Laukika statements will only be authentic if they are being uttered by a trustworthy person. Aptata is a very, very important criterion for that. For Veda, we don't have to think. Whatever is stated is pramana.
But the about Vedic information, do they accept the Mimamsa interpretation of a verse and an object? That, for example, you talk.
No, it not at any point they will agree. You see, there is also a question: what is conveyed by a word as its meaning? When I say cow, is it an individual cow or is it cowness in general? Gotva samanya or go? What do I convey? According to Mimamsa, it is jati, gotva. And according to some of them, it is vyakti. But for Nayayikas and Vaisheshikas, it is not only vyakti, not only jati, vyakti vishishta jati. When I see, and it is always, if you analyze, maybe at the philosophical scale, they are at a very lower stage, but commonsensically, when I see a cow, I not only see this individual cow, but the notion of cowness is operating somewhere at the back of my brain. So, vyakti vishishta jati, according to them, is the import of the word. So, there is a debate between Mimamsakas and the Nayayikas regarding the nature of Shabda. Is it eternal or is it non-eternal? About the import of Shabda, what is it? Is it vyakti or jati? Or vyakti jati both? So they say vyakti akriti jatayastu padartha. What is a padartha? Padasya artha kim? Vyakti hi akriti hi jati hi va. So the Buddhists have participated in this debate also. They don't accept jati at all, Buddhists. They have raised serious objections to this notion of jati. For them, it is only vyakti. But for this generic thing, they will say akriti is included in that. When I talk of a cow, it is not only that individual cow, but there is some apoha included into it. So, vyakti, akriti or jati. But for the Vaisheshikas, it is vyakti, vishishta jati.
So this
area of the philosophy of language, there is another angle to this, which is a very deeper one, which Bhartrihari, as in Vayakarana, he is on a different level although. But these two schools, Mimamsa and Vaisheshika, because Vaisheshika is talking of Padartha and Mimamsa is talking of Vakyartha. This also we have to keep in mind. For the Vaisheshika, it is only the meaning of a word. But for Mimamsa, Apta Vakyam Shabda. And Aptata does not pertain to human beings. It is only available in the Vedic statement. And there, even if there are objections in Mimamsa, that some of the Vedic statements are just like that. They mean nothing. But even then they will say they mean nothing, but they are Arthavada statements. So they may be meaningless to you, but they are not meaningless in essence.
Oh, I think this is a very non-academic, non-scholarly question.
No problem.
I have a problem in the sense is that why Shabda as a Pramana cannot exist as a Pramana, because each person interprets whether the sentence, the Vakya or the meaning of a word differently. And that we have seen right throughout, whether it's a Vedic literature or later scriptural literature. So how does in that way Shabda can be a valid Pramana? Because when you see light by the eye, light is seen, but the degrees of brightness is different. There is no any kind of argument about whether the light exists or not. But the meanings of the word, whether it exists or not, I mean, to me, that's where the problem arises. The sound may exist, but does the meaning exist? Because meaning is added, and every time people have interpreted the same thing so differently, in total contradiction. So how can then Shabda be a valid methodology?
So I think you are supporting the Vaisheshika point of view. That's what they say, because Pramana by definition is Pramakarana. It's not any source of knowing. It's a valid means of knowing. Because what is Prama? Prama is Yatharthanubhava Prama. Valid cognition is Prama. And anything which leads me to that valid cognition is Pramana. There may be many means of knowledge, but they all will not be Pramana. They will be Pramana only and up to the point they help me in arriving at the right cognition. So you have supported that word is there, but meaning may be different in case of all of us, all the hearers or all the speakers, all the interpreters. That is all the more reason to say that Shabda cannot be an independent Pramana, but it will be dependent on the relationship of the word and meaning. Whatever the writer is, suppose Kalidasa is saying a sentence. Any interpreter would explain it in a different way. But if we have to reach at the meaning, what he wanted to convey, then we have to know what is the Purvapara Prasanga going on, isn't it? We quote and misquote Manu out of political requirements today. But if we have to reach at what he meant to convey, we have to go back to the reference. So that is why we say explain with reference to context, isn't it? So that reference to context or that relation between the word and meaning has to be there prior to my comprehension of that meaning. So that is all the more reason that Shabda has to be reduced under inference and not... It is whatever we may reduce it or we may accept it as an independent pramana, but this much is very sure that it is not as strong and undebatable evidence as perception is.
But doesn't that come in because we've used the same word Shabda for both for sound and utterance. If we didn't use Shabda to denote both sound and utterance, then we wouldn't have this problem.
Yeah, maybe because when we are talking in English, that creates problem. But in Sanskrit, they have already said Shabda is dvividha, dhvanyatmaka and varnatmaka. So sound is dhvani matra. And that is when we break the piece of bamboo into two, that is only a sound. When we beat the drum, that is dhvani, sound. But what we utter, that is Shabda. Varnatmaka Shabda.
Because I was going to ask you, because in the lecture you also said that Shabda is an objective experience according to Vaisheshika. So I guess they refer to dhvani there, not to the...
No, towards the end of my paper, did I say that? Towards the end. And that was not the Vaisheshika view, that was my own view, that Shabda is not as much subjective as perception is, or for that matter, inferences. Because when we hear whatever is being spoken by a person, another person, we have to depend on what he has to convey. So in that sense, it is objective. It is not merely subjective. Perception, as she rightly says, that we are watching a movie or we are watching an object, everybody will have a different experience. Maybe it merges at a point, but it will be a subjective experience for everybody. But not so in the case of Shabda. That is what I meant to.
Okay, because they also say that Shabda is a physical property. Like
When it is guna, it is a physical. By physical property, I mean it is a bhuta guna. A guna or a property attributed to a material substance. They talk of dravyas into two types, bhuta dravyas and murta dravyas. And five are the bhuta dravyas, prithivi, jala, teja, vayu and akasha. And they have a technical definition of bhutatva. What does this bhuta signify? Bahirindriya grahya vishesha gunavatvam bhutatvam. A bhuta dravya is that whose vishesha guna or specific attribute can be grasped by an external sense organ. Now you see, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha, Sparsha and Shabda. These are the five Vishesha Gunas and they are grasped by the external sense organ. That is why these five Dravyas are Bhuta Dravya. And which are the Murta Dravyas? Parichinna Parimana Vatvam, Murtatvam. Those Dravyas which have a limited magnitude. So now, out of these five Bhuta Dravyas, Akasha has to be taken away. Because Akasha is Aparichinna Parimana. It's Vibhu Dravya. And we replace Akasha with Manas. Prithvi, Jala, Teja, Vayu and Manas. These are the Murta Dravyas. And this we will have an occasion to study when we study Tarka Sangraha and Samanya. There are six Jati Badhakas which Udayana talks of. It's very, these are not Jatis, neither Bhutatva nor Murtatva, because they are not mutually exclusive. They are going into others' area, crossing their own dimension.
By claiming that Shabda, the Vaisheshikas, by claiming that the Shabda is not an independent and hence a valid pramana, what is it they were trying to achieve? Are they trying to achieve in time saying that negating the validity of the Vedic injunctions and prescriptions?
No.
What are they trying to do?
No, not at all. That is what I have been trying to say, that they have accepted the validity of Veda. Maybe it is not inherent in their system. It seems as if these two sutras, Tad vachana dhamna yasya pramanyam and buddhi purva vakya kritir vede, because they were debating with the Mimamsakas and the Mimamsakas alleged them to be nastika or avaidika, so they had to bring in this topic of Vedic authority. But when they do not accept Shabda as an independent pramana, what they mean to convey is that the process of getting to this prama, Shabda Prama or Shabda Bodha, it is not different than what is there in the case of inference.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And as you can see, they will not accept anything extra. If they can manage with two Pramanas, they will never accept the third one. They began with the six Padarthas. They didn't mention the seventh by name. But later on it was felt that Abhava needs to be added, because that is a very, very prominent phase of our experience. So later people added, but Kanada did not. So he didn't accept Shabda as an independent Pramana, but when the later scholars had to fight with the Mimamsakas, and when they needed the support of the Nayayikas for fighting with Buddhists, they accepted Shabda as a Pramana. So there is a long historical background behind this development in their concepts. And it's very interesting. Actually, this debate about the language and its philosophy between Mimamsa and Nyaya, it's a very, very interesting area of research.
Unfortunately, we have to come to a conclusion.
Yeah,
but we
definitely.
Thank you so much for an extremely stimulating talk that I learned a lot from. I've got a few questions here, but we have to stop, so I'll ask you them.
So maybe,
another,
yeah, we'll discuss.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. So they discovered the arbitrary nature of the sign before so sure, really, then.
Hmm?
The,
yeah.
Can I send you first?
Arta and
Shabda
and Arta, yeah. That relationship,
yeah.
They think is
arbitrary.
It's arbitrary,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's not given.
It's not given.
No.
Yeah.
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 So so Sanskrit is a purely conventional language for them.
No, they do talk of the given fact portion also. The Vedic portion is given. The Vedic words and their meanings are given.
Yeah.
But they do accept that there is an arbitrariness into language in the sense that we are coining new words every day.
Oh, indeed.
That's it. So that is why they are very progressive. They are rational. They are rational in their outlook. That's very striking.
Very striking. Yes.
Yeah. Not only rational, they are also pluralistic and individualistic.
Yes.
So that is very interesting.